Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm going to ask you to entertain it in your mind. If you could live without fear, you tell me what you couldn't accomplish as a human being. Especially given the fact that the only obstacle that any human being ever meets in life, the only obstacle that we ever meet in life, is what we have yet to understand about ourselves. That is the obstacle. No other obstacle exists apart from what we have yet to understand about ourselves. So if it was possible that you could be a person without fear, if you could act in the moment without doubt, you tell me, if you could do that, what couldn't you do? What's the answer? Nothing. Because no matter what it was, even in quotes, if I didn't succeed as I stepped forward to engage whatever it was, because I engaged it fearlessly, if you will, or with a willing to learn from it, which is the same thing, then let's say I don't get, in quotes, to what I'm trying to get to, I've understood something that kept me from getting there, and the next time when I start over, having learned what I must, then I'll go further, won't I? I'll be able to make a steady progress at no matter what it is that I'm attempting to do, if I could learn to live without fear. Everybody in agreement here? Gotcha. Gotcha. Look what I just did to you. If I could learn to live without fear, as though somewhere in some great book it is written, thou shalt be afraid no matter what thou dost accomplish. Where on earth, people, did you get the idea, did we become so thoroughly conditioned that it is ingrained in us that fear is one of the partners that we have to go through life with? Where did it come to us like that? And please, 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 please understand this is not motivational. I'm asking you to examine your life because I said, if you could this, if you could that, and you go, yeah, that'd be great. If I could, why isn't it like that? What's happened to us is the question. Because in case it's not clear, and we're going to make it so, then how can a human being ever know freedom as long as he or she has fear in their life? And here's an answer to the question that I've posed. There are instances in every one of our lives where, because of what we do, we've learned not to be afraid to some degree or another. Meaning, when we do certain rote things, that which we do rote wouldn't rile anyone else because we've learned to do it and that we can do it. But take me out of that role. Put me in a condition or a circumstance that I'm not used to acting in mechanically, and up inside of me will come a certain amount of fear that instantaneously interferes with not only the possibility of me doing it, but with me even learning about the thing that I want to do. Appears by itself. So what we are going to do is we're going to learn about fear. We're going to learn things that I can tell you no one else has learned unless they've walked the road that we're walking together and are going to see the things that we're going to see in this meeting. And I'm going to start with a story, but I'm going to set the story up so that you can kind of understand what it is that gives rise to this and how much this fear permeates our lives that we are, well, how about this for a contradiction. How many of you are afraid to admit you have fear? Do you understand what I'm saying? Most people, you say that there's fear in their life, they will get angry with you or they will insist that they don't have any fear in their life. And if you ever want evidence of fear, find someone who gets angry at you saying that they don't have it in. Anger is one of the ways in which we hide fear. When you see an angry person, you are seeing a person who first felt fear and then in order to protect themselves from it, express a certain negative state because then I'm looking at you as the cause of what I'm feeling instead of seeing it something integral in myself. I was a YMCA boys counselor when I was in high school. It was a summer job. I guess I was maybe 16 or 17 years old. And I needed a summer job, and it seemed like a fun thing to do. I thought it would be great to work with kids. And I remember this one event, and this is fairly young, where I was asked to close the gym, which was to close at 5 p.m. And there was five or six kids in there, six, seven, 8 years old, playing in the gym. And I was asked by Norm, that was the name of the fellow that I was under. He was the head guy there. He said, "Guy, I want you to go close the gym up." And I remember going to the door of the gym and opening it and seeing these six or seven kids in there playing. And I remember I was flooded with fear. What I'm saying is I saw at that moment when I opened the door and then I knew I had to go talk to these kids, six-year-old, seven-year-old, eight-year-old kids. I remember, by the way, when I was 17 years old, I was about 220 pounds, and I looked a lot better. And I remember, I had a moment of awakening. I thought, what the heck is this? I'm 6 feet one, I weigh 215 pounds, and here's these little pipsqueaks in there. And I felt fear over going and asking them, telling them they had to leave the gym. Now, lest you think that I'm an oddball, have any of you seen in yourself instances like that where the most simple, seemingly harmless situations where you have to do or ask or say something, and up inside of you will come fear, yes or no? Good, okay, I want to make sure that we're not thinking, poor guy, why am I listening to him? And I remember going and doing it, because I was supposed to do it, and I thought, you know, I need to understand, how can a seven-year-old kid cause fear in a 17-year-old kid who, you know, it's not like the kid can beat me up. Even if all of them came at me at the same time, I would have batted them off like flies. And this is what your mind goes through. You're looking at these kids, and you're already working out a war in your mind that doesn't exist. So that's what we're going to look at. Because it isn't just the seven-year-old that you need to say something to that fear comes up in. It's all the time in small, secret ways, finding ways as it does to slowly, slowly, slowly find certain places and times in our life where it seeps into us and causes certain problems. So here's the story. First deep breath, because we have actually two or three of these stories. Here's a successful man. Not the greatest in the world, not the least in the world, but successful because he attempts certain things and he's been gradually achieving certain ends that he dreams for himself. But a phenomenon is occurring to him that I pray occurs to you. And that is that there's a certain relationship between the amount of success that he's achieving and the antithesis of what he thought would happen as he achieved the success, which is that he begins to grow afraid, more afraid. He always thought to himself when he had a company, had employees, you know, that at last he'd be in command. But now he starts to see that he's actually afraid to talk to some of his employees. Not just afraid to talk to them, but every circumstance, every situation, all of the things that were to be the foundation of a certain fearless state in him. actually start to become the ground of a new kind of fear that he doesn't understand, not for the life of him. And as this happens, and it does in the life of those fortunate few who have been chosen by life with a capital L to discover what it means to have a truly fearless life, he began not to notice, because here's what you do when you start noticing stuff like that. You either start taking drugs, you take drinks, or you try to convince yourself that what you're really experiencing isn't. And you're going to push it all down so you don't see this fear. Because how can I be more afraid when I've made myself in my own eyes in a situation where I'm going to be less afraid? Anybody relate to this at all? It is common, isn't it? We can see it happening to ourselves. And he's really troubled by this. And one night when he's sitting at home after having gone to a restaurant and noticing that when the bus table person came, you know, the bus person came to get the stuff from the table and asked if he could take the plate from his table, that he wanted to say, no, the man didn't want people reaching in front of him while he's still, you know, drinking his coffee. He wanted to say no. He wanted to say, no, go away, man. Not it rudely. He just wanted to be left to his food. And he actually saw himself fawn in front of the bus boy. And he's thinking to himself that night, this has got to stop. What kind of life? I have no freedom at all. It's the antithesis. And there he opens the newspaper right up to a page, big quarter page ad in the right hand corner. And it says right there in front of his eyes, tired of living with fear? Get the facts. Free meeting. He's thinking to himself, this is too much of a coincidence. And by the way, let me put this in. Most of what people say, you know, I don't coincidence. There are times in the development of a human being's life, and there's no question about it, when because they have made themselves ready to see what they need to see, it isn't though what they need to see suddenly appears out of some magic ether. It's been there all along. Their eyes themselves have begun to open so that they can see what has been presenting itself as a new possibility. And this is what that ad represents. It said, tired of living in fear, get the facts. And it had a place and a time and it all laid out there about where you're supposed to go. Now, you put yourself in the place of the man who saw the ad. Next day comes up. It's a Thursday. Time is 7:30 p.m. And he's sitting there at his house and it's 6:30. It's 7:10. And he notices he's afraid. He thinks to himself, if I go there, what if someone is there who knows me?
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
What if one of my employees or somebody that one day I hope to work for, what if they're in this meeting and they see that I'm there trying to figure out how to be free of fear? How are they going to get involved in my life? And he catches it, fortunately. And he says, all right, that's it. And he gets in his car and he drives to the place where the meeting is. He walks in and it's a small room, about the size of the room we're in. And there's a chair and a desk in one end and about 8-10 chairs spread out there. And he's the only person in the room. Now, what's the first thing that goes through his mind? I better go. I don't want to be the only person here. It'll mean there's something really wrong with me. And his mind starts to tell him that he better get out of that place, lest the person who comes thinks, boy, this poor sap, you know, I put the ad in the paper. Besides, now his mind's saying, what's the catch? Well, how much is it going to cost? What's the deal? And his mind's starting to race like crazy. When out walks a kindly looking elder gentleman. And he says, good evening, sir. And And the man that's in our story says, you know, hi, how are you? And the elder gentleman says, look, let me just cut straight to the chase. And the fellow's already thinking, okay, here comes the wham. You know, here's the catch. $500 and 34 treatments later, I'm going to be free of this fear if I get that far. And before the man can even speak up, out of that pressure inside of him, our hero, he says, all right, look, can we cut to the chase? When you have people that act arrogant, you will always find fear behind that bravado. How much is this going to cost? He said. And the man said to him, well, sir, if you insist, this meeting is $3. And if you can't pay, you don't have to. But plus, you have to pay for the cost of whatever supplies we use. Ah, ha, ha, ha. They don't charge you for the treatment, but they charge you for the supplies. And how much is that? He said, oh, it usually runs about $2-3. He said, that can't be. You know, he's thinking of himself, that can't be. There's another catch. There's always a catch, isn't there? And he says, all right, well, then what is the catch? And the man says, well, now that you've asked, there is something. He said, I'm going to tell you what this is about. He said, and if you don't like it, no problem. You can walk out the door as free as you walked in. What I'm going to do, the instructor said, is I'm going to give you a small video recorder. And he showed it to him, no bigger than a small box of matches. And it'll just clip right to your belt. And if you don't want it in your belt, it'll go in your pocket. It's thin enough. No one will notice it. And he said, the other thing that you have to do is you have to wear this little ear device, which is almost invisible, that sits right there at your ear. And he said, I want you to understand, it's not a device for you to hear through. It's actually a microphone. And our hero's thinking, well, what kind of weird deal is this? And what on earth does it have to do with fear? I'm going to wear a tiny video camera that's going to videotape my actions, and I'm going to wear a small device that has a little microphone in it so that they can record whatever it is that I'm doing. And he's thinking to himself, I don't know if I really want to go through with this. But then he remembers that he's really tired of having the fear in his life that he does. And he says, all right, you know, what have I got to lose? $3 and a couple bucks for tape? How bad can it be? And he agrees to the situation. And the man says, you have to wear this for 3 days. And at the end of 3 days, you'll come back here and we'll review the findings. And our hero says, okay, goodbye me. And like I said, this meeting was on Thursday night. And so Friday night, which was the following evening, our hero was engaged to speak before a business group. And he went about his business wearing his little micro video camera and his little mic in his ear. And he did his presentation in front of the business group. And the next day, Saturday, it was an opportunity for him to play golf with his friends. And he went out and he had a bad round, like he usually does. If you're a golfer, you know what I'm talking about. And played golf that day and came home that night. And then the next day on Sunday was his day to visit with the kids because he'd been divorced. And so he had planned to take his child with him to the art museum and to share the day doing these things. And he did that. And he wore this tiny device all 3 days as he was instructed to do. Now, take a deep breath. Because what he learned on Monday when he went back for his appointment was staggering. And I'm going to assure you that when I tell you, as we will reveal the outcome of the taping, you too are going to be astounded. You will be hopefully a little bit shocked, not as shocked as he was because he had incontrovertible evidence at this point. But you will have this evidence when we're through with our talks, and you yourself will be able to see this. So there he goes, and he walks in, and he gives the fellow that owns the business, the fact-finding to make a fearless life business. And he hands him the little video recorder, and the fellow takes the little video recorder, and I don't know if you've seen this thing, a little nothing, he plugs it into another little nothing, and he decides to run it without sound first. And so what they do is they watch. And they watch the man. And basically, you know how you see a highlights reel? Because I can't go through all 3 days, not in another 22 minutes. Highlight reels, and here's what we see in the highlight reels that this man saw. He sees himself that night, Friday night, getting ready to do his presentation before the group. And just before he goes to get up out of his chair, he sees himself come to a certain pause. And then he gets out of the chair. He sees this. And then that day when he's playing golf, each time before he swings, he sees himself address the ball. And just before he swings, he can see a certain tension set into his body, just before it. And then the third day, on Sunday, when he took his daughter to the museum, he'd taken her home, and he sees, and he can actually see, and he remembers that he wanted to say something to her. He wanted to express affection toward his daughter. But he sees himself do it, and then he sees this great hesitation take place, and then he sees that he doesn't speak the words that he wants to speak. And he sees these three things occur on film, and now the teacher says to him, "All right, now I'm going to play the audio. And I must warn you, sir," he said, "before I play the audio, the odds are you're not going to believe what you're going to hear. But I assure you that this isn't trickery. And," he said, "if you will use your own life to look back at the moments that we're describing and the ones that we pointed out that you saw as the highlights on this tape, you will see for a fact what it is that you're about to hear happened as it did." Is this a good mystery? Okay. Because I don't have an ending yet. Just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding. So he starts the tape, and there's the man, and he's watching himself, and he watches, and the sounds there in the background, he can hear the clatter of the dishes at the business meeting, and he gets up, he starts to stand up, and right when he starts to stand up, loud, because it was right in the microphone, he hears a voice, and the voice says, "Wait for me." And the man, our hero, looked at the teacher. I thought, I didn't hear that. And the man says, be patient. What this tape device did and what this microphone does is it picks up things that are going on beneath the human senses. It's picking up things that you can't hear with your normal ears. That's why you didn't hear it. But let's keep watching the tape, shall we? And he says, all right. And there he is out on the golf course, and each time before he putts, before he swings, at that moment of where his body tenses up, he hears that, "Wait for me." Same thing on Sunday with his daughter. He's there and he sees himself. He wants to start to say something to tell her, simply that I love you. And he starts to say it, and just at the moment that he can't say it, he hears over the audio tape, "Wait for me." They turn off the machine, and our hero's confused a little bit. And he turns to the teacher, and he knows that there is something that occurred in those instances just prior to the action that he was going to take, that something did interfere with him. Something did come into his mind at that moment, but he never knew it. And here was something, and he turned to the teacher and said, "What in the world is that? Who is that? What was that about?" And the teacher looked at him and he said, "That, my son, is the voice of fear. It always says, 'Wait for me.'" Now, fear, the kind of fear that we're talking about, presents itself in all kinds of different forms, with the one exception of what I must explain, because otherwise you're going to take exception to this, except for instinctual fear. And instinctual fear never causes the individual in whom it appears to suffer. Instinctual fear is what says, "Don't go out into the freeway." Instinctual fear is what moves you out of the way of a falling building when it's falling. And then afterwards, have you ever noticed that something happens and then you feel fear after you've acted? Because the instinct nature will move us out of the way, and then the mind will go ahead and create what could have happened or what might have been had you not been moved away by this instinctive motion. But this is not what I'm talking about when I say instinctive fear. Now I'm talking about something altogether different than that. And this is a fear that literally wants us to consult with it. And it wants us to consult with it so that its life, in quotes, can seep, and that's the proper word, seep into us. Now, what is this fear that seeps into us, that says, whether we hear it or not, wait for me? It lives, this fear, in the dark crack, and that's a good expression for it. It lives in the dark crack that exists between any divided action. This fear lives in the dark crack that exists in any divided action on our part. Now, please, you use your minds to see the fact of this. I'm asking you to see it in your own experience. What happens when you're getting ready, for instance, to come up and speak in front of a group? No one said anything to you about it, and then say, who wants to speak? And for a second, maybe there is this idea, I shall do this. I'm going to do the presentation. I'm going to accept the challenge. Maybe you're playing sports, and you're with friends, or you're by yourself, and just before you take an action. Have you never noticed that in that second, prior to what you're doing, there's a kind of micro, what we'll call them in quotes, micro delay? And that micro delay is where fear gets in. Because it's in the micro delay where a thought about myself, about to do something, searches the content of myself for whether or not I can succeed at it. It looks back over my experience in an accumulative way, looking for instances and examples where, in the past, I have either succeeded or failed at doing something like that. And in that reference process, if I can actually come up with ways that I've succeeded before, then I'll usually proceed. But I still waited for fear to say, wait for me, so that it could find in this divided mind something that would allow me to walk through it, but with it as my guide.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
But with it as my guide. And when I was mulling over the notes that we're going through, the talk, I was able to see something that I'm going to pass along to you. It's intimately connected with several ideas. One of them is, have you ever heard the expression, don't let the left hand know what the right hand is doing? I am giving you the literal, true meaning of the expression. Don't let the left hand know what the right hand is doing. The left hand is the fear nature. The right hand is spirit. Fear is not a creation of God. Fear is not a creation of God. It is a creation of His creation. Fear is not a creation of God. It is a creation of his creation. We as human beings, created beings, are given by a form of proxy, a power. We can create certain things. Our mind is a, in quotes, creative mind. And the Creator did not produce fear, but the instrument he gave us with which we can create has in it an element that produces fear, that makes fear. The amazing thing is about what I'm telling you is that as a person starts to understand a little bit of this process by which, you know, I'd like to go up and say hello to somebody. Have you ever wanted just to say hello to somebody? And you know it's an appropriate thing to do. Wait for me. Yes or no? Wait for me. Why? See, that's the man, our hero, he couldn't believe it. How could there be actually a voice? And it is in a manner of a voice. Maybe you won't hear it in those words as you learn to wake up and catch some of this invisible interior work going on. But it speaks in that kind of emotion. It speaks in that delay where for a split second, a person who is about to do something can't act purely. And they can't act purely because the mind itself has become the creature, has become the character that's going to act. And it never acts without consulting with its own past to assure that it will succeed according to its idea of what it means to succeed. So it always delays its action. This is what human beings are. They're a delayed action. Because they've asked within themselves for something to take themselves through something. And listen to this important idea. Something inside of us asks us if we can be taken through something and succeed. And what is it that is being asked in the moment where we want to know if we can get through this and come out on top, other than our past experience compared to the image we have of what it means to succeed in that moment? Do you understand the idea? You always have that comparison, which we've talked about before. This is what essentially the mind's doing, all unseen. I don't think I'll do this because I've looked into the great records and most of the time it doesn't turn out that good. Besides, I don't look that good today, and then the rest of it will start going on, you know, like my pants are too loose or whatever inane thing the brain will come up with to justify not taking the action, because it'll say, you'll wait for tomorrow, you'll look better, or something. It'll give you any possible answer other than to see that at that moment you had, in its unseen appearance, a partner called fear. And to see this, to see what I'm talking about, to actually hear it, if you will, to actually discover for yourself this thing that says, wait for me, is the beginning of the end of it. Now, before I go on to the next story, I want to ask you a question now, because we'll put you in the place of the hero in the story. Can anybody kind of see where they've heard in their heart or in their mind, wait for me? Can anybody see it? Wait for me. I want to become a different kind of human being. Maybe at the simplest level, I want to increase my education. I mean, I don't know what it would be. You name for yourself. The minute that the mind starts to think about a way in which it wishes to do what? To go past itself, to express itself. The minute that longing for a wider world appears, in comes this nature that says, wait for me. Because, you see, if you don't let me go with you, something bad may happen. And the thing that needs to be seen is that something bad is happening to you the minute you've said to fear, walk me through this. Which is what we do. Unseen, because it speaks to us unseen in the darkness of our own mind. I said that it lives in the dark crack of any action divided by thought. So now what we have to talk about is there evidence of an action that isn't divided by thought. Because if everything has to rely on us thinking about what we're going to do before we do it, then we're never going to be free of that action of thought that's divided itself, that always consults to find out whether it's possible. Imagine asking, this is a great contradiction inside of human beings. I want to be a new man. I want to be a new woman. But I won't take the action to become a new man or a new woman without making sure that I can succeed at it. And the only way I can make sure that I'm going to succeed at it is by asking everything that I've been in the past whether or not it's possible. And if my past says yes, then it guides me to the images that it holds and what it means to be that. And if it says no, I just say, okay, thanks, I just thought I'd check with you. So, take a deep breath, because now we're going to find out whether or not there is a way for an individual to live without fear, to live without this voice that appears almost every time that you even meet somebody, even before you say hello to people, even in friends and family. Wait for me. So, ready for the story? Because this is what we're talking about. So far, we've had the wrong partner in life. Period. Wrong partner. Fear is the wrong partner. Fear promises one thing, delivers another, as we well know. So we need a new partner. Who's the new partner going to be? Here's a young seagull, baby seagull, maybe 3 weeks. And you know seagulls, they have to fledge and they gain their strength. And we're going to picture this on a beautiful, huge rock outcrop. Have you ever seen the pictures of the, like, way up north in Alaskan areas or tundra areas? It's pretty stark and pretty darn cold. And the season for hatching and the parents feeding the birds and getting them out of there before the big storms come in, it's a pretty darn brief thing. It's really pretty dramatic. And this is where we are. We're on one of these huge, maybe 1,000-foot, 1,200-foot rock cliff faces with various little outcrops and things like that, and a hatchery of, I don't know what it would be, 10,000 seagulls. Can you imagine the noise? And they're all there, all going through what they're going through. Now, we have in our story a little hero seagull. And she is a small little seagull. She wasn't quite the... there's always two or three eggs. She wasn't the big bird. She wasn't Big Bird. She was one of the little birds in the nest. And her brothers and sisters, the two brothers and other sister, within a certain amount of time, you know, not only were they taking up most of the nest, but with their flapping, they were getting pretty good. And one by one by one, our little heroine saw these brothers and sisters eventually flap their wings and take off. And she, naturally wanting to fulfill this, sat there and tried to flap. But as the fates would have it, because it's my story, the first time that she tried to take off, she didn't do too good. And she flapped as hard as she could, and she fell about 10 feet to another rocky outcrop. And she's sitting there kind of dazed on the rocky outcrop, and she's thinking, oh, brother, this flying thing doesn't look, it isn't all it's cracked up to be. I mean, and not only that, but there must be something wrong with me, because my brothers did it, my sister did it, and I don't know what they did different. I just did it, and nothing happened. Look at, I've got a bruised beak, beaks. Yeah, I got a bruised beak. And I was thinking to myself, well, you know, I'm not afraid of this stuff. I'm going to try it again. So a little baby seagull sits there and does its flapping, takes a step, falls another 4 feet onto another ledge. The minute it falls this time, it backs up into a corner because it looks down and it sees that, you know, without too much between itself and this rocky sea coast, there's not a lot happening. And how many times can I do what I just did and hope to succeed? And so now fear starts to seep into the little gull. And if you will, put yourself in the story of the little bird, and you can hear it, can't you? It looks over the edge, and it hears, wait for me, because I don't want to fail at this. I don't want to fall to my death, and that's the truth. I don't want to do that. And it's sitting there, and while it's sitting there, because the story is dramatic and we don't have much time to go through it, we can see way out in the distance the huge first onset of the Arctic storm approaching. And, you know, You got to get out of there. You got to fly south. You got to get to where the anchovies are and the rest of the feeding and where the rest of the flock is, because that's what you got to do if you're a baby gull. And it's sitting there and it's terrified and it walks up to the edge and it walks back and it walks up to the edge and it walks back. And while it's doing that, by the grace of the great gull god, a big albatross. Now, how many of you know what an albatross is? Albatross is a fairly phenomenal bird. They can actually stay out at sea for months at a time, if I'm not mistaken. Never land. Never land. They just fly. They're masters. This large albatross sees this gull, one of the only one left on the rocky cliff. And it flies down and it lands there next to the gull. And it says to her, well, don't you think you ought to be moving on? You know, in a wise albatross voice. And the little gull says, well, yeah, I want to move on, but I'm just not getting this flying thing at all. It's not working. And the great albatross looks at her and he says, you know, it's your nature.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
It's your nature to fly. And the little baby, the little female gull says, well, it may be my nature to fly, but you weren't here. Because I flapped, man. You wouldn't believe. I flapped and I flapped. And the wise albatross looks at the baby gull and it says, look, I'll tell you what. I'm going to tell you a secret. It's a six-word secret. And it's the secret to flying fearlessly. But he said, when I give you the six words, you have to promise me that you'll act on them. The minute I give them to you, you'll understand them in a way that you couldn't have before, and then I want you to leap. Will you promise me you'll do that? And the little baby gull, you know, look, well, because this is the condition. I either stay here and perish, or because of some grace, this albatross is telling me something, and if it's true, I'll know it and I'll do what he said. And so the little baby female soul goes, okay, all right, I'm up for it. What is it? And the wise albatross, he leaned forward. And he said to the little gull, let the wind do the work. Let the wind do the work. And the little albatross, the little seagull knew immediately that was what was going on. It was trying to fly on its own. And it stood up on the edge, it put its wings out, and it leaped, and the wind caught it, as the wind is always intended to do if you aren't flapping at wrong angles. And it lifted up the seagull, baby seagull, and she flew off to where the feeding grounds were and the rest of her family. Let the wind do the work. What does that mean to us? It means, for one thing, that what we have to do is begin to understand that when the moment comes where the partner that we've been partnered with says, wait for me, we meet that moment with a new answer, which is, I have a new partner. And the new partner in this instance, and listen to this, but you will have to leap yourself. There is no way under the sun, no matter how much I explain this to you, that you will ever understand it as the truth that sets you free from fear. You will never understand it as the truth that sets you free from fear unless you yourself leap like the little seagull did from that rocky outcliff. And this is what the truth is. Have you ever heard the old idea, the expression of ask and it shall be given to you, seek and ye shall find? Do you know that the whole idea of seek and ye shall find has become a big, how do I say, mistake in the minds of human beings? Because when we think seek and we will find, we think of ourselves as finding it, whatever it may be, the big it. And when you name for yourself whatever the big it is, the minute you name for yourself what the big it is, you bring in the big fear. Because now you have vested yourself in something large, protective, going to be there for you in the future. When, and to the point of the whole talk, is that seek and ye shall find it means that every moment we will simply just act. Just act. In the moment of action, we are not only seeking it, but we're given it. And what are we given? We're given the new understanding that it's possible to learn from the moment instead of going into it, having something in us confirming it that'll be there for us. Can you understand the idea? What I'm saying, in essence, is that over and over again, something in us acts based on this misunderstanding of that I must be safe going into this action. I must know how it's going to turn out. And that's where fear gets us. It says, wait for me. And then it talks to us. It tells us what will be, what might be, how we may succeed. We're not doing it anymore. That partner is pain. The new partner is letting the wind do the work. Letting the wind do the work. Letting life reveal to us what we need to have revealed about ourselves. Why don't I want to take the leap in a relationship? Why don't I want to take the leap in front of a group of people? You for yourself, ask, why? What is it that stops me from taking that leap? And what you'll see is that what stops you is that you may not succeed. You may fall flat on your face. Something bad may happen to you. Yes or no? I'm asking you to see, where does that thing that is bad come from? What is the nature of that thing that you see after you hear in your head, wait for me? And the nature of what you see is what this negative imagination creates. So the mind actually shows you how you can fail. So that showing you something that it has imagined will turn you into a willing recipient of the guidance of fear that always says, don't do it. And here's the bottom line. The reason that fear says don't do it is because as long as a human being remains under its guidance as its partner, the human being can never outgrow it. The human being can never outgrow the divided mind in which that fear is bred. And we're here to outgrow this divided mind. Perfect love casts out fear. How does a person find perfect love? It's not an idea. I'm telling you how a person finds that perfect love exists. A person finds perfect love by throwing themselves out into it without seeing it. You can't see the wind. Let the wind do the work. Here I am. I'm afraid. I have so many things to be afraid of. My life. It can be as small as what are people going to think of me if I make a mistake? And so rather than in quotes find out that that self is a fallacious self, by the way, which I don't, and when I don't, who do I live with? Do you understand the question? When I don't challenge the fear, my guide condemns me to live with the self that it's capable of talking to and that I remain for the rest of my life as its being. So here's the point. When a person starts to catch this, that small, tiny thought, that feeling that, Pat, wait for me, you recognize it. No. You see, it doesn't, I'll say it to you like this. You who wish to be true, you who wish to have a life in God, you who wish for a new kind of understanding, you cannot fail. You cannot fail. Why? Because everything will educate you as to who you no longer need to be, who you no longer need to consult with. Knowledge, like we're gaining here, knowledge is the seed of wisdom. Knowledge is the seed of wisdom. Action is what lets it flower. Action is what lets it flower. When we don't act because our own mind interferes and divides us up into someone who may not succeed because the same mind holds the picture of what success is, we have already failed no matter what we do, because all we do is strengthen the imagery that brought the fear to play in the first place. But when we're willing to let the wind do the work, and that's what I'm talking about, to understand that this universe, it is literally set up so that a man or a woman can discover their true nature in God, their true life. It's set up for that. That's what it means to let the wind do the work. I cast myself out into it. Not because I'm brave, by the way. See, this isn't about bravery. What did the young seagull face if she didn't take the advice of the elder albatross? She faced the winter storm, didn't she? The darkness was coming. When you start to hear in your own head, when you start to see clearly, and you will, wait for me. Something actually wants me to embrace fear. When you see that something wants you to embrace fear, and that fear is doing it under the pretense of protecting you, actually granting you freedom. Freedom from what? Freedom from getting hurt. Well, who invented the hurt that fear is protecting you from? It's consulted with part of your past, who you are no longer. It's consulted with an image that's been reconfigured from your past that it calls your future that you are not. And so it presents every possible picture it can to make you a prisoner of that relationship. And no human being will agree to live as a prisoner of fear. We live as we do captives of it because it has convinced us that it is for our better interests. Not anymore. Learn what it means, and you'll have ample, you know, life is nothing but a series of opportunities where a person can leap. Learn to leap. Let the leaping teach you about the liberated life. Because when you'll leap, when you'll act, and you might even hear the thought, you understand? Wait for me. I have a new partner. And then you put your faith, if you will, in the understanding that who you are is meant to succeed by discovering over and over again, if you will, who you are not, who you need no longer be. Then you will fly fearlessly like our little seagull learned to do.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.